This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You and I have unfinished business.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Get away from her, you...
Ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
The Movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Umar Pagan, I'm Pagay Pagan, alongside Ian McNally. The Nun is now in cinemas. This is the next film in James Wan's Conjuring verse. This one's directed by Corin Hardy and it's written by Gary Dorderman, based on a story, original story by James Wan. It stars Tysa Farmiga, Demian Bashir, and Jonas Bloquet. And it is a prequel to 2016's The Conjuring 2. Now, the movie begins in 1952 in Romania.
At the Santa Carta Nunnery.
is it Santa Carta?
It's Santa Carta in Romania.
All right, there we go. And it kind of begins two decades before Ed and Lorraine start their paranormal investigations.
That's the Warrens, not just Ed and Lorraine from around the corner.
No, that's right. That's right. The Warrens. An apparent suicide kind of triggers an investigation by the Vatican. And thus, an exorcist, I assume that's what he is, Demian Bashir.
Well, he's a miracle hunter, and we'll talk a little bit about that later.
Yeah, he gets sent along with a novitiate played by Tessa Farmiga. And who is Vera Farmiga's sister?
Younger sister, yeah.
They both get sent to this convent to kind of investigate what caused this suicide. Horror ensue.
Of course. Like, none of this matters.
You're right.
None of this matters. It's all about get on board the scary train.
Exactly. I have to say, right from the outset, this is very different from the other movies in the Conjuring verse. I guess one could say that this isn't your conventional horror film?
Oh, God.
Huh?
I think we need an exorcism in here.
I mean, it's a very different kind of scary because the Conjuring movies and even Annabelle movies are kind of rooted in this sense of anticipation, right? Throughout mm-hmm. the whole movie, you're waiting.
But not the whole movie. This is the thing I always forget about the Conjuring movies. There's a point in the Conjuring 2, I think, where the demons just, they're there. Like, it happens earlier and earlier, I think, these days. And that it's like there's the idea of the spooks coming and, like, doors closing and things happening and hints are happening. But in this, it's very much in your face very early.
And I think that's because we know the bad guy is Valak.
Yeah.
We've seen him in The Conjuring 2. And I think the creators of this movie are well aware that there is no big reveal.
No.
And so there's this scene in the woods, in the forest, when Jonas Bloquet's character is running through and there's a woman that's hanging from a tree and then pounces on him and tries to eat his face.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're like, oh, wait, this is a very different kind of horror movie.
This is a woman in a suit movie.
Yeah, and it's good.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think that's underselling it quite a lot, though, because after watching this, I want to go and watch. I saw the trailer for Colin Hart's other movie called The Hallows, I think it is.
I haven't seen that.
And it's an Irish folklore thing that looks pretty good as well. But the thing that's exquisite about this is the lighting and the lighting scares. You know what I mean? There are visions in this. There's a point where the nun does a Jaws impression underwater,
yes,
and it looks amazing. There's a shot where a door opens and you can see the nun's face kind of very lightly in the dark. Like you can just about make it out, but their body's not there and the actual contours of the hall form the habit around them. And
yeah,
there's all sorts of little things like that going on where it's not, say, those moments from Hereditary where there's something in the background where you can just make it out. It's not that kind of scare where
no,
when you see it, it gets you, but there's just this beautiful use of light in this movie. Like, it never feels like you can't see what's going on, but everything is exquisitely lit.
Absolutely. And there's another thing that Corin Hardy does, which is incredible. The camera's constantly moving.
Yes, it's always on a boomerang rig or something where the camera is in someone's face and just say, hey, it's safe. We can see there's nothing behind them. We're going to pan to the left. There's nothing over there. We're going to pan back and, oh my God, there's something behind you. Or there's nothing behind you and we're going to pan back to the left and there's some feet dangling and, oh my God, there's a hung nun.
But that's what's great, right? Because the camera's constantly moving, you constantly have this fear that you have no idea where the next thing is going to come from. Because it's not the usual pan to the left, pan to the right, there it is. Yeah. No, it could be the left, it could be the right, it could be behind you. And you never know where the camera's going to stop.
You can't rely on your senses.
It's really smart.
Yeah, I mean, it actually reminds me a lot of, there's a video game called Fear, F-E-A-R, First Encounter Assault Recon or something like that.
Right.
And it was a spooky shooter. And the thing that did was constantly mess with your expectations. If you're walking down a corridor towards a ladder, you know you've come from that corridor, you know it's safe. But as you turn to climb down the ladder, you look behind you and there's something there. And you just see it for fractions as you go down the ladder and you go up, it's gone again. And it reminded me of a lot of that.
But it also subverts those expectations because there are moments when you think something is going to happen because that is what would happen in a predictable horror film.
Yeah.
But the creators of The Conjuringverse are well aware that they've done it to you enough times that they're going to play with you.
Yeah. And there's even just the whispers. There's whispers of like someone's running through hanging sheets and you say, Father.
That's a great scene, by the way. Yeah. Also exquisitely lit.
But also, dumb as a bag of hammers. It's like this guy, so we talked about the miracle hunter earlier. This priest is supposed to be a miracle hunter, but it's implied he also does the other end of things, which would be the exorcism and not so, the opposite of miracles, essentially.
Well, not so much implied. They actually show you a bit where it's a failed exorcism.
But for the first half, he's the worst one of those ever. It's like, oh, look, there's a child reminiscent of something bad in my past. I shall follow it into the woods. What are you thinking? Once I got on board with the scary train, it was fine. But I started laughing halfway through. And there's a moment with the priest that happens where the whole way these movies work is up until the point where you see the demon standing in the lobby like in Annabelle. It could just be your mind. There's always that hint of it, right?
Yes.
And it's like a door closing at the wrong time or opening at the wrong time, something rolling off a shelf, unfortunately. But there's a point in this movie where Valak is like completely overpowered. Something happens, which is like, if he can do this at a whim, there's nothing these people can do to him. And it involves a grave, right? You know that scene I'm talking about?
Yeah.
If that can happen, then reality as we know it is out the window and all you can do is run as quickly as possible before this thing kills you. Now, that's a kind of a problem for these movies because there have to be an escalation. And at that point, they've showed their hand too much.
Well, I think that problem exists also because this is a prequel to a film where they've already showed their hand.
Mm.
And I think the one movie that did that better was probably the Annabelle prequel that came out last year. Because the first Annabelle was a bit of a letdown.
I don't know. There was that's the one where the 7-foot-tall demon downstairs in the storage locker gave me the heebie-jeebies. I was like, I was not expecting that.
It did, but I thought the second movie was actually better. The second movie scared me more.
I think the bell ringing in the bed.
I knew what the doll was.
Yeah, I'm having trouble remembering a lot of that movie.
Which
I think is going to be a problem with this one, too. Just I think this is a fun ride, but when the ride is over, like, it's very telling at the end of this, we spent 3 minutes talking about, well, where was Valak at the end of The Conjuring 2? Was it in The Conjuring 1? And there's a scene in this movie where it's like, it could be in The Conjuring 1.
Everything kind of ties back into, this is the Marvel effect, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when he's making a prequel in the same universe as The Conjuring, he's got to find a way in the epilogue to kind of tie it back to those movies.
He has to tie it back, but this is essentially the appendix of the Conjuring movies. Like, if you remove it, it doesn't make any difference, but like, it's fun for the ride.
That being said, given how much they seem to be developing this horror universe, I like that they're really going the whole hog with regards to myth building. Do you not enjoy that? Because I'm like, it's not just a demon. It's tying it back into like World War II.
That idea, but it's like, it's the same demon, which is the kind of thing in the Star Wars universe where it's the same planets and the same people. It makes it smaller. You know what I mean? If the nun, I couldn't remember if the nun was a harbinger of Valak or actually Valak himself in the previous one. I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
Apparently, I looked it up. It's the same guy. And it's also based upon like from some mythological book as well. Not mythological, but some previous spirituality book. But it doesn't, at the end of the story, it doesn't really matter. Do you know what I mean? The ties, I did think there was going to be a familial tie because Thaisa Farmiga has been cast and there's like...
And she looks kind of similar to Vera Farmiga.
And there's kind of a romantic tension with another character. We should talk about Jonas Bloquet's Frenchie because the other element that we're not talking about yet is how funny this movie is.
Yeah, so this movie kind of fluctuates between tense thriller and campy comedy.
And after that moment I talked about earlier where the Valak showed their hand, I was laughing at all of it, but... With all of it, right?
And the campy comedy really works.
Yeah.
And Jonas Bloquet's character, he is both the comic relief and somewhat of a savior hero, right?
He's Canadian. French Canadian. And he exactly. gets to, and he's pretty handy with a boomstick, and he gets to play Ash from Evil Dead in this, essentially.
He does.
And
he does.
There's a moment with a room full of horror, and like he just says, "Of course." And that was hilarious. It's just, it's a, he sells it with two words. He sells the whole ludicrousness of the concept, but also sells that he's going to sort it out.
And it works, right? Yeah. I think that level of self-awareness is something that doesn't necessarily exist in a lot of horror flicks.
I don't think it's unintentional that at one point a door flies open and essentially SWAT nuns fly in. And not only that, they line up in a 3-3-2 formation. It's essentially a football team praying against the demons.
Yes, yes, that's right. It is very smart.
And I love the idea. There's an idea in this is that there's a gateway to hell, and it's there's nothing they can do to seal it. So perpetual adoration is what they have to do, which right. is someone's on the clock. They're basically hell security guards. I love that idea.
Which also makes for a very, very cool set piece in the show that kind of subverts your expectations as well. There's a lot in this movie that really, really works. And I think we left the cinema and we
were smiling.
We were talking and we said, all of the scares were fun.
Mm. Yeah, there's like when they introduce the plague bells, the concept of the plague bells.
Oh, there's what a clever idea!
But you know that's coming. It's brilliant. The moment it starts happening, you know what? It's like the film is working with you.
Right. So the plague bells are these little bells that were hung across graves, and yeah. basically, if it was ringing, it meant someone was buried alive.
Accidentally. And like, there's a point where they're using one of these bells as a beacon, and then they all start ringing, and it's just.
You know what else Corin Hardy does well? What he does well is he works really smartly with small set pieces. So there is a scene when Damien Bashir's character is buried alive. I mean, you see that coming. It's not really a spoiler. But what he does within that confined space and how he uses a lighter to kind of create this tension and suspense back and forth is very good. He doesn't go for like the big, massive set piece.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of those at the very end.
Yeah. But when there's a sudden lake all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah,
because
exactly.
Because you need a water level.
You need water.
This is the Dark Souls of Conjuring movies. Like, I would think this would be brilliant if they did a Dark Souls movie of the video game, or there was another one that sprung to mind. I would like to see this director do a Hellboy movie.
Yeah.
This is almost like that. All that the priest needed just a few more knickknacks in his bag to ward off evil, and it would have been that movie. Like, I don't think it's a spoiler to say there is essentially something that is incredibly similar to the holy hand grenade of Antioch in this movie. And I laughed out loud the moment I saw that. And I was expecting them all to say, run away. Like, it's Monty Python-esque.
Yeah.
And what that leads up to, which we shouldn't talk about, but I don't know how to explain how that they actually resolve the tension in this movie, because it's kind of weird.
It is weird, but I didn't dislike it.
No. But it's like, it's kind of punk in a way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they don't use the holy hand grenade in the way you think they would.
No.
And it's kind of gross, and it's kind of weird, and you're like, wait, did she just do what I thought she did? Because, how does that work? Which, again, I loved all those moments, but I just think afterwards, if I'm not looking at notes next week, I won't remember an awful lot of those moments.
But I think that is a perennial problem with a lot of these horror movies, right? I struggle to remember what was going on in The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2 and how it tied into this movie. I remember Valak because he was genuinely scary in that film.
And there was the painting that my Farmiga had done. She had a vision of it in the previous one. She wrote his name down in the Bible. I mean, again, looking at Wikipedia, it refreshed some of this, but it was still there. The Annabelle movies, not so much.
No.
I mean, because it's the problem of that without the Warren. I mean, they do a very good job of creating Warren stand-ins, and they work quite well, although any miracle hunter who's looking at books that are basically, they have the look and feel of evil books, and he's reading them out loud. Don't do that.
It's like he's never seen a single episode of Buffy.
Exactly. They're good stand-ins, but they're not the Warrens.
No, and I think that's where a lot of these other movies fall short, because Ed and Lorraine Warren were such iconic characters when The Conjuring came out, and they were sold as something so believable based on a true story. Yeah. These people were real and all of that stuff.
And the Vatican's got their number and all
exactly,
this stuff.
Exactly, and you really bought into it.
What you want is them doing more things. Like, we need four movies of them doing that. But it seems like we're going to just look at this corner here, and also three of these things in this corner don't matter.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we know Annabelle's locked up in their safe now. But like knowing where Annabelle came from and then knowing where those people got it, like that's such a weird thing to go back to. It's like, well, before this lightsaber was his, you know, it was this guy's before him who you never heard about. It was this guy's 1,000 years ago who you really don't care about. We're going to tell his story anyway instead of telling the story you really want.
Welcome to Star Wars Legends.
Yeah.
Exactly. Go check out The Nun. It is a ton of fun.
It's a hoot.
It really is.
I was just grinning from ear to ear with like the laughs, the scares. My girlfriend was looking at me like, why aren't you scared?
Why
like,
are you enjoying funny, this, it's great. This much, yes. Right? Exactly. Go check it out. It's now in cinemas. Let us know what you think when you've seen it. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
You're listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.